All right, you're back in the DFSR, and we're here with our NFL podcast for Friday, September 23rd. That is
James Davis.
I am Doug Norrie. Threw you for a loop there, buddy. We're from Daily we're from DailyFantasySportsRankings.com, DFSR.com for short, here to help you get started or continue winning in FanDuel and Draft on FanDuel and DraftKings. You head over to the site, you can grab a free, limited time, free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab that helps you one button click optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. You also can check out our new Player Lab, which is going to help you filter for a bunch of different trends. And as the NFL season really gets rolling and we get more and more information, that will become a more and more powerful tool. Really excited about that. Like I said, free for 3 days, $29.95 a month after that. It also includes MLB. And this is pretty much the end of our free trial period. So one last chance this week to grab that and you're all set to go. We are going to spend most of this podcast breaking down all game by game, looking at the fantasy implications for not a full slate because there's a bunch of teams on a bye this week. But I wanted just real quick your thought. The game last night, the Patriots and the Texans. At this point, does it even matter who Bill Belichick has as his personnel? We should just start playing a game of like, we're just going to keep lowballing and see like we'll keep putting worse and worse players for them on offense and just see at what point the bubble breaks and he's not able to win a game.
Yeah, you know, I think it's interesting actually. So I was listening to Revisionist History. So that's Malcolm Gladwell's podcast.
Oh, and he had a guy smart guy. Listen to other non-sports podcasts. Here we go.
Yeah, yeah. Well, he had a guy on there that was talking specifically about English Premier League soccer, and he was going on about how, like, a lot of people think it's all about getting the big stars, and in reality, it's all about not having the weakest link. Because, like in soccer, what they call football overseas, a lot of times, you know, scoring is very difficult, and you have to chain together these rather elaborate sequences in order to score a goal. And so, you know, if it breaks down in the midfield, then you're in trouble. If it breaks down, you know, your striker can't finish. Or on the same token, like if you play mostly sound defense, and then someone gets burned, you're up S Creek, as they call it, Doug. That's what the not so nice people, the naughty mouths, call it. S Creek.
In our unfiltered version, you'll hear all the curse words that he says. But this one
exactly. You have to be a subscribing member to hear us swear about stuff. But I wonder, and they didn't talk about this specifically, but I wonder if football, the NFL, isn't kind of the same way. You know, you have flashy stars, big name guys, you know, who are on the front cover of magazines and whatever, and I mean, the Patriots have obviously done this forever, right? Traded down draft picks and, you know, kind of put just a smattering pieces around their one star, who, by the way, they picked up in the back of the draft, right? So I do wonder if the NFL isn't like that in some ways. Like, I'm also picturing the Broncos last year, right? I mean, the Broncos, who was the big headlining star of the Broncos? You know, an aged quarterback who was arguably the worst quarterback in the league to ever win a Super Bowl. So,
right.
I think you can put it together by just being simply a B minus at every position rather than having a few A pluses and then rounding out your roster with Ds. So cool. I thought that was a pretty interesting case study. And I wonder if, you know, the league is still rather inefficient around overvaluing so-called superstars.
Well, right, because the Texans have what I would consider to be at least one superstar in Hopkins, right? And they have a guy that they want to be a superstar in Miller want to have him be a superstar, meaning they're just going to willing to handle the ball a million times no matter what the game script is, right? And so they have arguably many more name, like J.J. Watt, they have a lot more name guys on their team, and they just got blitzed last night, and not even like football blitz, just like in just general, everything from like the coaching to the personnel, just about everything seemed to be behind the eight ball. Granted, they fumbled twice. I got a truck driving by me here. I'm gonna close the window in a second. But
very professional.
Yeah. It was just funny. I think you're probably totally correct because it wasn't just like, oh, Jacoby Brissett willed them to victory. It was like, well, they also just allowed 0 points to this team. And
yeah, well, and that was it, right? And I think like, I mean, you talk about Lamar Miller being, I mean, why pay up for Lamar Miller? You know, we love Lamar Miller from a fantasy perspective,
right?
But paying up at running back is just being skinny and fat in all the wrong places, right? Like,
right.
You just don't need some big name, so-called big name, big dollar guy to take the ball out of someone's hands and run as hard as they can. They're shown like, yeah, there are differences among the top guys. But I think like from a strictly football perspective, again, from a fantasy perspective, I'm sure I'm going to talk about Lamar Miller. He's my favorite play for week three without even seeing prices and matchups, just because, you know, we have another game where he gets 21 touches where they lose by 27 points. So his role is secure, but this is really what you wanted for your big money, a guy who gets 3.6 yards a carry and you just can't win. I mean, it just makes no sense. I think
it's the exact thing smart teams don't do. So
exactly right.
Smart teams.
And I think DeAndre Hopkins, for that matter, like, you know, people look at him as a big name, sort of like superstar level guy. Well, we've shown in the past that mostly performance in the NFL comes down to targets. And, you know, given that Hopkins was throwing the ball more than all but two guys in the league last season, it kind of makes sense that he had 1,500 yards, right? Like,
right.
Look at the guys just below him. You know, he had 20 more targets than Brandon Marshall, 33 more than Odell Beckham, and had 50 more yards than those guys. So, like, I don't know. I don't know that DeAndre Hopkins is a legit superstar. I think he's a fantasy superstar, and it's going to be hard for him to be an elite-level real-life player. And this isn't a real-life podcast. We're all about fantasies here, but
right.
It's going to be hard for him to be an elite-level wide receiver if he's only going to catch 55% of the balls thrown his way.
No, I'm with you. The Texans just sort of seem like a mess now, and the Patriots, again, exceed expectations. Let's break down the games for this week. We'll start with the Carolina Panthers. The Vikings going to Carolina to face the Panthers. Right now, the Panthers are one of the bigger favorites going into the week at -7. That's come down just a little bit, but not enough to really make any real waves. Cam's coming off a huge game. We're also coming off a huge game from Diggs on the other side of the ball with the Vikings really banged up with no Adrian Peterson. What are you looking at when it comes to the Vikings and Panthers?
Well, we talked about, I think, the two big guys on the Panthers side of the ball in the last podcast. We like both of them in probably any format, but particularly in big tournaments, and that's Cam Newton and Kelvin Benjamin. Benjamin now established himself as a big, you know, a wide receiver one level talent. And, you know, you could argue that the price still might be a little bit low on him, considering that he hasn't really had a game where the game script has been entirely favorable to what he does best. You know, a tough matchup with the Broncos in week one and then a blowout last week. So I could see, you know, I mean, unfortunately, I guess for his value stock, he did catch two touchdowns last week, so he's definitely on radars. But I think that offense continues to hum along and has a nice week. As far as the running back situation, it looks like a running back by committee thing right now. And I'm not impressed. Like, I'm not going to be trotting Fozzie Whitaker out there personally, or Cameron Utters Payne. So I don't, you know, I'm not feeling very whelmed by the options in the backfield there.
Yeah, it's funny about Cameron Utters Payne because, you know, Ron Rivera comes out and says he's going to be the guy. Like, he's like praising him. This guy wasn't even dressed for the first 2 weeks. they said it was because he couldn't play special teams, and that was why they needed Whitaker to be able to play special teams and be the backup running back. My question would be, how good can you be if the team's not even willing to put a uniform on you? So
the answer is you can be pretty good, because again, taking the ball out of the backfield and just running as fast as you can, we've shown it's a pretty interchangeable NFL level skill, and they're not going to give him the ball every time, even if he's the future back. Like, Whitaker was definitely serviceable last week. You're not going to see Artis Payne get in there and carry the ball 20 times. And he doesn't need to on his current prices, right? So I definitely don't fault anyone for taking a stab on one of these guys and, you know, kind of figuring that someone's going to carry the ball and do a nice job with it. He's very, very cheap on FanDuel at $4,800. So,
yeah, he's $3,000 on DraftKings. I mean, that's the case for him on really over
right,
there.
Giving him away.
If you thought he was going to get 10 carries, then for $3,000, you're getting pretty close to maybe really considering it. So that's really the only case for him there. It's just the prices. Same with Whitaker, $3,800 on DraftKings. If you thought one of them rises to the top in
sure.
terms of getting like maybe double-digit carries going in, then that those prices are really advantageous. It's just that you really can't trust the situation.
Yeah, and this is the new normal in daily fantasy. I think a lot of people, and they did this with Spencer Ware in week one, and I think, you know, even top-level analysts came out after the fact and were like, whoopsie, probably shouldn't have done that. Good thing we got away with it because Ware went off. But, like, you know, it used to be that you could get a $5,000 running back who was definitely going to get 18-plus carries per game,
mm-hmm.
and that's not what we have here. And so it is relevant as to whether, you know, these specific guys are actually going to be decent or not. And it's not so clear to me at this point on Friday that I'm willing to recommend them in anything other than a big tournament.
On the other side of the ball, Stefon Diggs has a huge game. We talked a lot about him on the last podcast. I don't think we need to go too crazy about it. Do you like him replicating that, maybe not the performance in terms of yards, because I don't think that's – no one would ever project him for that kind of output in terms of just what he's going to do. But in terms of his volume in this game, they're supposed to be playing from behind. He has Bradford. Do we like – he's showing up for us in terms of cash game lineups right now at the top of our optimal lineups. Do you feel safe with Diggs running him out there?
You know, I do. We talked about this when we were doing a sanity check on the Thursday lineups before lock, and – I think you made the astute comparison to Stephon Diggs and Jordan Matthews, and we were looking at some of their preseason projections from different outfits, just trying to get a lay of the land on how people picture Diggs' season going specifically in terms of regressing his receptions per target. And then you pointed out, well, Jordan Matthews and Stephon Diggs share a quarterback, like in terms right. of – so Matthews' projections come from – having Sam Bradford as his quarterback, and Stephon Diggs' projections came from Teddy Bridgewater. And actually, when you slide in Bradford's sort of accuracy and overall profile where he likes to throw the ball, that Diggs actually becomes a lot safer of an option than a lot of people projected him in the preseason. And I think if people are still using preseason baselines there, and hopefully respectable outfits aren't really doing that as much now, but if you're still using preseason baselines, people might still be a little bit low on him or be running with he's running hot narrative. But no, I like him quite a bit. I think, he's obviously not going to convert better than 80% of his targets into receptions just because basically no one does that. But, he might be a Doug Baldwin style guy who can top 70 plus, and that makes him an excellent play at 6,400.
On the running back side for the Vikings, I'm just going to mostly just say skip. We talked a little bit with Asiata and McKinnon. They're pretty big underdogs against a pretty good defense right here. It's tough. If you're not willing to go the Artis Payne-Whitaker route with Panthers, I can't imagine going the Asiata McKinnon route where they're supposed to be losing in this game. Is that enticing? If you think, again, that they can control the ball and that one of them is coming cheap enough and they're going to just rise to the top with carries, sure. But after that, it's not that exciting of a narrative for me.
Yeah, I'm not over the moon necessarily, but they came out and officially named him the starting running back. They don't like Asiata in the starting role. They tried and felt like that sort of failed in the past. I could see McKinnon arguably being a safer option than either of the cheap Carolina guys.
Well, I don't think so. But yeah.
So the inherent risk, maybe we can make a little challenge on this one. The inherent risk with McKinnon is that he's not the goal line back, but right. He's fast. I mean, he can break off long runs. He can score from outside the 10-yard line. So I don't know. Do you want to throw down the gauntlet here? You want to challenge me and you can pick a Carolina guy and I'll pick McKinnon.
Yeah, I'll take Cameron Artis Payne over McKinnon.
Cameron Artis Payne. This is such, I wish we were betting real money. Maybe we should.
Yeah, we can if you want. I just don't think it's going to – I mean, the only thing that's going to help McKinnon maybe is passes out of the backfield. I mean, he's probably I probably shouldn't be so bullish on this, but I'll just do it for funsies. That's a pro term, funsies. So okay,
For funsies, we'll say, what, $20,000?
Yeah, you got it. we can escrow that off the air. No problem. All right, let's move on from this game. We'll get into some more no halftime challenges as we roll down, and we'll go through we'll talk about no halftime in a little bit. The next game on the list – is Denver heads to Cincinnati to face the Bengals. Bengals a slight favorite here, -3.5, probably mostly for the home bump and nothing more. Pretty low over under. Two decent defenses going in this one. Anything exciting you about this game?
Oh, not especially, unfortunately. I mean, I think CJ Anderson could arguably continue to be underowned here, but the price now up at 8,000 on FanDuel. You're not really getting away with anything playing any guy at 8,000 unless you have one of those elite top tier guys like maybe D'Angelo Williams right now or one of the top wide receivers. So for me, I can probably just pass. I don't you're not crushing it even if CJ Anderson goes in there and replicates his last game, for instance, where he had almost 100 total yards and a touchdown. So I don't know that you can pencil him in for anything better than that. The Bengals are I think a complete stay away from me top to bottom, right? I mean, AJ Green came crashing back down to earth last week. You still got to pay top-level prices for him. The running back situation is a straight-up committee. I can see Giovanni Bernard being kind of interesting from a big tournament perspective just because he garnered so many targets last week, and he's still so cheap. I mean, he's only 5,700 on FanDuel, and you talk about a guy who can – I mean, he had 100 receiving yards last game. There aren't many guys who had 100 receiving yards last game who are currently 5,700 on FanDuel, so you can make a case for him, but nah, overall I'm kind of out here.
Yeah, the Broncos so far in DVOA ranks second, and they've actually faced two decent teams in Carolina and Indianapolis.
Yeah, no kidding. And they were great last year, too. Right. Like, I don't know.
So I just don't think you need to go there, and I don't think anyone else is going to either. And I'm just not even really seeing so much of the upside here, just because of the defenses being pretty, you know, on both sides of the ball, and the Vegas line reflects that. So let's move on.
Exactly. Well, and the new quarterback in Denver. I mean, because normally, like last year, we would have spent some time on Demaryius Thomas and Emmanuel Sanders, but you know, even at very competitive prices now, like Sanders is 6,500 and Thomas was 72, they would have been must plays in seasons past. And
yeah, I think as we get down the list, we're going to talk about some wide receivers that are just more heavily targeted in better situations. Let's move to the next game. A little more interesting here. Detroit heads to Green Bay. Green Bay has actually one of the higher implied totals on the week coming in. I'm not totally sold on Aaron Rodgers just being this fantasy elite quarterback. Maybe we can talk about him a little bit. His numbers, this, you know, even coming from last year, are pretty underwhelming considering the name recognition he has. And I wonder sometimes if we fall into a trap of, well, this is Aaron Rodgers. This is the, you know, discount double check guy, right? Like we know who he is. He's had, I mean, obviously immense success in the NFL. But the last couple seasons, I'm not sure are bearing that out. He does have Jordy Nelson coming back. Nelson seems to be getting more comfortable in the offense coming back from injury, which is encouraging. On the Lions side of the ball, Amir Abdullah is not going to play. They're going to try out Theo Riddick and some Dwayne Washington, I believe. So let's start with the Green Bay side of the ball. What do you think about Rodgers so far? Is Rodgers still this an elite level fantasy quarterback? And is he a guy that we can consider even for, like, let's say cash games this week?
Yeah, I mean, so at this point, Rodgers is 32, right? So he's fairly old by football standards, not super old by quarterback's standards. Not as old as you, birthday boy from a couple days ago.
Thanks, pal.
Happy birthday again, by the way.
Wow, my birthday week. Ooh, I love people that talk about their birthday week. This is my birthday week, so I'm just going to spend the whole week celebrating the day that my parents just, you know, popped me out. You know?
Yeah, we were hanging out. My wife famously forgot for the whole day that it was your birthday, so yeah, I know you're still kind of bouncing back from that, but it's big of you, actually, just to keep pushing on when your friend of 20 years forgets your birthday. moving on. So yeah, Rodgers, I mean, I have a lot of difficulty here, right, because you know, so he was bad against Jacksonville from a fantasy perspective, under 200 yards.
That's a real bad sign.
That's a real bad sign, right? Because Jacksonville is pretty bad against the pass, at least from last season and early returns on this year. And so, you know, you could chalk it up to maybe game script, or they think they're going to win anyway, so why not just run the ball more or whatever. But, you know, 58.8% completion is bad. And then goes into Minnesota, and when his team needs him, they lose by 3 points, and he goes 20 of 36 for 213 yards. I mean, I think this could be a combination of not just Rodgers kind of entering a new stage in his career, to your point about last season, but also the rest of the guys on his team maybe entering a new phases in their career. Like, now we have 18 games of data where Rodgers is under a 60% completion percentage. You know, he dropped off in yards by 500 last season. Jordy Nelson is back, which is, okay, great, but you know, he hasn't just been that top level guy that we saw from the past. So unless they really shake anything up, I don't think you can, there's no reason, I guess, to pay up for him when you just have other options.
Yeah. I'm even thinking that we're a little hot. Like we're even our system, I think, is carrying over some of this, like Aaron Rodgers is going to regress back to what he was. And there's just increasing evidence that that's just not going to happen. I mean, it might, but
yeah, I mean, we've seen a lot of quarterbacks carry elite performance into their mid thirties, and you know, it's going to compare Aaron Rodgers to guys like Brady and Manning, who were terrific in their 20s and terrific in their 30s. And, you know, not every quarterback being equal, but that's oftentimes the best we can do, right, is compare players to comparable players from the past. And, yeah, Rodgers just might be a guy unto himself that's just not quite on that level.
And, yeah, so I just don't know. I mean, I was looking through some early lineups, and I know that the early only, it was kind of thinking that maybe he was the play there. But this is a guy that I'll probably do somewhat of a deeper dive on just when we get off the podcast here, just to make sure that we're totally accounting for his completion percentage, because I'm just not sure we are. We might have been looking too historical on that one, and the number just is not going to be back to what it was.
I think that's a very real possibility.
On the Lions side of the ball, you know, Marvin Jones still seeing some decent amount of targets there. He is a guy that was, I think, maybe still kind of a value, all things considered, especially if you think they're going to be playing a little bit from behind. He is, you know, he's a little bit less than the group of wide receivers, which I keep alluding to, and we haven't mentioned any yet, but is Marvin Jones or even Golden Tate a guy that we can trot out thinking maybe Detroit's going to be playing from behind a little bit and will be incentivized to throw a little bit more?
Yeah, I like Marvin Jones quite a bit. I mean, He's clearly sliding into the conventional wide receiver one role here, filling that void that Calvin Johnson left. And obviously, I don't think he's a talent on the level of primetime Megatron, but, you know, 8 receptions for 118 yards last week. He hasn't punched one into the end zone yet, which leaves his price wanting a little bit. But $6,900 on FanDuel is nothing for a guy who's going to, you know, garner the level of targets that he had last week. So, you know, I consider this a fairly strong matchup. I mean, we saw Stephon Diggs just destroy the Packers in a very similar profile, frankly. So I could see this being a really, really big week for him and would be comfortable playing him just about anywhere.
What about a guy like Riddick? It appears that he's going to be the RB1. He doesn't really fit the mold. He's clearly not a bruiser. He's more of a third down back. But if they're going to give him the ball on early downs and then theoretically leave him in for later downs, because he's really just more of a pass-catching running back, and that's a real thing. He's a decent he's one of the higher-targeted, actually, running backs, considering how many snaps he actually gets. If he's an every-down-ish back, is Riddick a guy coming, I don't know, cheap-ish, all things considered? Is he a guy that you can slot in there with the idea that even if they're losing, he'll still be coming out of the backfield?
I mean, Riddick is the big question mark for me going into this week, actually, because, so, you know, he had 11 carries last week and 4 receptions. So you'd love to see 15 touches out of a guy, you know, who wasn't even the defined number one going into that game. But the 11 carries was the most of his career. He'd never had more than 7 before that. And it really makes you wonder if the Lions actually picture him as a guy who can go out there and get 18 touches in a game, you know, or 22 touches or whatever, or especially be a first down back. Riddick's historical yards per carry is quite bad as well. I mean, he's got a 3.2 yards per carry for his career. Yeah, so it's pretty, but I mean, that's not reassuring. You know, they like Dwayne Washington. They had, you know, going into the preseason even, and I think Dwayne Washington will probably get the goal line carries as well. You know, Riddick for me, I guess, would be a lot more interesting if he, this is like another one where I guess I just don't understand why he's, and he's not expensive, but yeah. Like $6,400 on FanDuel and $4,900 on DraftKings, are you, you know, that's not that much safety built into those prices, right?
So there's almost no safety built into it.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. He has to be good on $6,400. Like, he can't go out there and be like, hey, he got 7 receptions for 30 yards, and so he's automatically paying his price, like a $3,000 guy on DraftKings. Like, that's just not the case. Like, he has to go out there and actually bruise and smash the ball through the tackles, and I don't find the safety there at all. Again, I don't fault anyone for playing him in a big tournament. In fact, he probably has tremendous upside if things break the other way, and he's better than I assume, but I don't see any reason to believe why, you know, that he'll be a true number one guy you're happy to spend essentially mid-tier running back prices on.
It's funny because he's priced in the same, he's still priced on DraftKings at least, he's still priced in the zone of guys in timeshares slash like third down backs, like Giovanni Bernard, Duke Johnson, guys like that. And you know, he doesn't really rise to the top too much just because the matchup is still not great. Like against Green Bay, they're a decent defense, especially against the run. So I don't know. It's just not exciting to me. And the yards per carry thing is a real problem for him, because if he's not going to be able to get anything going on the ground, then you're really, really just kind of totally counting on him getting 6 to 7 targets. And I just don't think you can really pencil him in there. Right now, we have him for 14 carries and 5 targets. That might be high, all things considered, 19 touches altogether. And still, the system's not really, you know, bringing him out to the top. And I think that kind of volume is sort of best-case scenario. Best-case scenario. I don't think that – and again, it's because we're stuck with a couple of these situations where, I got to be honest, we're just kind of guessing. I mean, we're making really informed guesses about some of the situations in terms of who is going to get the touches. But at some point, it really is just – we're just kind of giving them numbers based on some historical stuff.
Well, I've got news for the listening audience. Everyone's guessing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we spent a lot of time. Again, not all guesses are informed equally. I could throw it at a dartboard and and give them some numbers. Right. We're using it to inform it. But there are so many situations here where there's going to be more than a few that everyone's just going to be kind of wrong on because they weren't sure, right? And right. So Riddick strikes me as possibly one of those situations where, sure, he could get 20 touches, he could get 7, you know? And I wouldn't be surprised really kind of either way with that situation. On to the next game, Ravens and the Jaguars. Jaguars, we mentioned them before, they're the ills that they had defending really just about anything, the pass especially from last year, carry over into this year. They're still a bad team. Ravens, I don't know what that Ravens are. They're just kind of a team full of a bunch of guys. There's a couple interesting plays here. I think Flacco's a guy that our system is liking, mostly because it's liking his price slash the matchup with the Jaguars. Let's start with the Ravens. Is Flacco a guy that you can even he's not in the top lineups, but he's not so he's you know decimal points away in some cases from being a kind of an optimal lineup guy. Do you think that's correct on Flacco?
Flacco's a hard guy for me to evaluate actually because he's a guy. Well, I just don't like his chops as an NFL quarterback. So you know he's been around for a long time. And he's always kind of unexciting. And so this becomes one of those times where trusting the numbers is so much better than trusting your gut. Because, the big thing about Flacco, of course, is that he's down to 7,600 on FanDuel. And when he's in that price range, we're not expecting that much of somebody, right? And so, you know, compare him to a guy like Kirk Cousins, arguably a very similar quarterback. And for whatever reason, like, I just feel more excited about playing Kirk Cousins because I'm like, ooh, a cheap value guy who's kind of underrated. And sometimes, like, the old guy who's now kind of bad is as good as the up-and-coming guy who's still kind of bad but getting better. Right. So I don't – it's hard – I don't know. Like I said, it's hard for me to evaluate. You know, Jacksonville on the paper seems like it should be a great matchup, especially based on how things went last year. But I guess I'm still a little nervous because they did go out and shut down Aaron Rodgers. And, you know, there's just so many moving parts and so many variables here that I honestly don't feel great about it. But I totally understand where the system's coming from here.
Yeah, I think with Flacco, you're just kind of hoping for him to just be average, right? Like, you're just like, okay, go out there, right. Throw for like two, like especially like his DraftKings price is 6,100, which is, for all intents and purposes, pretty darn cheap. So, considering the matchup, you're basically just hoping he goes out there at that price and throws for like 250 yards and two touchdowns or something like that, or like a touchdown and a half and 300 yards, somewhere. I know he can't throw for half a touchdown, but just the idea behind, like, you know, the average performance. And I think it's, considering the makeup of their team, and he's, I don't know, that they will throw the ball. You know, he threw 45 times last week against Cleveland. He wasn't particularly accurate, but I think it's safe-ish considering the matchup. But you're right. It's just so unexciting because it's just like Joe Flacco, and it's just kind of a dude. And so I think from that point of view, I wouldn't mind him throwing him in tournaments because I think that people will just look at other players in a similar price range and just like them more. Like, I'm specifically looking at DraftKings here, but you know, if you stare at Flacco and Tannehill, you'll just definitely play Tannehill over against Cleveland. And if you stare at Flacco and Mariota, I suspect you would play Mariota too. So he strikes me as, if you think of that group, there's a chance that he has like a 300 game with three touchdowns, which I don't think is totally out of their own possibilities. Then I think I really like him from a sort of separation-y play in that price tier. But again, I'm with you. It's really hard to get excited about it.
Yeah, and I think, you know, back to Jacksonville for a second, you know, I think there's some buzz around, you know, are they a better passing defense this year? You know, again, I'm putting some of that out into the world. As I'm looking at things more closely, though, you know, trying to research for this weekend, sure, they've only given up 433 passing yards or whatever through 2 weeks, but, you know, yeah, sure, they only gave up 220 yards to San Diego, but that was four touchdowns and a 70% completion percentage. So it's not like they were just like, oh, it's everyone smothered. We got to run the ball. We got to do something. Like,
right.
They were just getting completely obliterated. San Diego didn't need to run the ball anymore or pass the ball anymore. So, maybe their resurgence is a little bit over-exaggerated there. Again, Flacco, ugh, he's just like kissing your sister, as they used to say, my old gambling buddies would
Yuck.
Say, you know. I'm talking about kissing your sister, by the way.
Oh, you kissing my sister? Double yuck. Yeah. Yeah. Perfect.
It's like when back in the day when I used to kiss your sister all the time. It's like, you know, it's one of those things where, I don't know, you'll do it, but are you excited about it? I don't know. So,
you're clearly not excited about it. Mike Wallace caught two touchdowns last week on only four total receptions. Do you think people end up looking at his, you know, he has 20 DraftKings points and 19 DraftKings points in the first 2 weeks, but that's only on seven receptions because he's caught three touchdowns of in his seven catches. Do you think people end up looking at the fantasy points per game and falling in love with the guy Mike Wallace, where the targets and just really everything else about him strikes me as a total run hot situation, but do you think that kind of entices people into wanting to play him, especially in what we consider to be a decent matchup?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird with Wallace, right? Because he doesn't have the profile of a conventional red zone target. You know, he's kind of one of these small, fast guys who runs really far and gets away from everyone. Mm-hmm. And so I don't see the touchdowns continuing in that way. I mean, Flacco's had a history of connecting with guys like this in the past, like Torrey Smith, you know. But I have a hard time imagining that a guy who's only getting 12% of his team's targets is going to be a really high upside guy going forward. I mean, to your point, to score two touchdowns and only score 18 fantasy points tells you probably more that this is like a situation where a guy ran hot than it's demonstrating any particularly new skill set. So at 6,500 on FanDuel in particular, I'll pass. I mean,
I hope people play him because it just
me too. Yeah, it seems like a complete trap to me.
Yeah, because people will fall. People definitely fall in love with those touchdowns, or people just fall in love in general with fantasy points per game. I know that's how they sort things, and they're just not actually prognosticating anything. They're just looking at that and just having that be a predictor of success.
And then they divide by games and they're like, look at this guy. He's a value. He's not as expensive as these other guys. Yeah.
And for some guys that is correct, fine. Like the guys that like Lamar Miller, like his number is fine. It may just be correct.
Yeah, but his fantasy points per game are great because he hasn't punched in a bunch of touchdowns.
Yeah. So. Anything at all here with either the wide receivers on the Jacksonville side of the ball, Robinson, guys like that, Hearns has seen a decent amount of targets so far this season, or any of the running backs, the Yeldon, the poo-poo platter of Baltimore running backs. I mean, is there anything that you would consider? I mean, this game has a decent overall total, all things considered. 47.5 is kind of high-ish considering the week, but it just seems like everyone sort of falls in this middle ground.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of weird. So first of all, the answer for Baltimore is no. None of these running backs are enticing at all. They're going to split carries and, you know, they're just not going to do anything. So it's, I think, kind of ridiculous to consider any of them for really any format. Not interested in Steve Smith and what he's done so far either. I think Jacksonville, it's actually a little bit interesting here because, you know, if the game script suggests that Jacksonville will not get blown out in this game, maybe TJ Yeldon has a little value. I hate to put him forward. You know, again, I feel like I'm, you know, trying to sell you a used car when I already sold you a lemon once on this. But, you know, Yeldon was still the feature back last week.
He caught eight balls for 10 yards. That's really hard to do. Like, it's really hard to grab the ball that someone throws to you. And eight times and accumulate 10 total yards from it. I don't know what it says. Like, on the one hand, I'm like,
that's not great.
On the one hand, I'm like, man, that's a crazy amount. Like, these guys averaging 7.5 targets a game out of the backfield. So you're like, holy cow.
That's what I mean, man.
But
he's really doing it.
He's just like such a bad player. I mean, he was like in a timeshare in college. So, like, how good can you be? Like, so.
You back to your college thing. No, but so the thing about Yeldon, though, again, like, you know, 15 touches when the team gets blown out, there's going to be a game. There's going to be a TJ Yeldon game, right? And I don't think you can say it's this week and you don't want to do it for your cash games at all, but don't be shocked. I mean, if you're down in those low price ranges, like, I think he has as much or more upside than other guys like Jerick McKinnon or Cameron Artis Payne, right? I mean,
well, hold on a second. You know, one thing I forgot.
Sometimes the guy doesn't go for 10 yards on 8 receptions. Sometimes one of those, someone trips and he goes for 70 yards, right? So I think he's got upside, but yeah, you're not excited about him for cash games. Side note too, and I just want to say this, and just also because they've never advertised with us, so I don't mind throwing them under the bus, but I want to know what's going on with the Yahoo people these days, because I am a dyed-in-the-wool old-school Yahoo game logs guy. Everyone has their place they go for game scores, right? I mean, you know, you tend not to mix it up. You have your place, you type it in, and just see what's happened. I went to Yahoo just to try to get the rundown of this Jacksonville-San Diego game, and much to my chagrin, I open it up. So they do the thing where I'm going to break this. This is going to be interesting. There's going to be a big payoff here, so you just wait. I open this up, and they have how the points were scored, fine. Then they go into receiving yards. This is the first stat they list in the box score, receivers. Then they go into individual defensive players.
Nice.
Then there's a lot of them, obviously, because, you know, 30 guys on each team get a tackle in a given game. So you scroll and you scroll and you scroll. I'm 4/5 away down the page, and I get the passers. Then I get the rushers, and then I get the kickers, and then the returns at the end. So I just don't – I want to know what's broken about just giving me all the stats. That's all I'm saying. I just want to throw that
out
there.
This is why hackers were able to just hack like 500 million Yahoo accounts over the weekend or whatever, and just because Yahoo just doesn't seem to care at all about what they're doing at any phase of the internet, I would suspect. One thing we didn't mention with Yeldon was that Chris – I'm just moving off from your Yahoo tangent. Is that Chris?
Yeah, we hate Yahoo. By the way, if you're out there and you're a Yahoo competitor, advertising space available on the TFSR box.
Chris Ivory is back this week, which probably will cut into Yeldon's overall touches, especially his early down touches. So that essentially probably wipes the door with him, although Yeldon is a guy that will be, if they're down, he's the guy that will probably come out of the backfield more in that passing game. So I think a lot of your ideas behind like a tournament thing stand, but the touches overall are likely to decrease. He was just about as bad as you can be on the touches he had already. So I don't know.
I wasn't actually taking everything into consideration, so I think you're probably right about that.
The next game, I think it ends up being a somewhat popular game in terms of cash. That's Cleveland and Miami. The Dolphins are – they were started at minus 7. They're all the way up to minus 10, which makes sense. Cleveland's on their third quarterback in 3 weeks. Cody Kessler is going to trot out there. Corey Coleman is gone now. The Browns have had about as bad luck as you can have for one single football team in the first 3 weeks of the year. They're trotting out – and this isn't like the Belichick Patriots trotting out a bunch of scrubs and hoping for the best. This is just now they're just trotting out a total bunch of losers. So the – Dolphins are an interesting team to me this week. Tannehill, Cleveland's been blitzed through the air already this season by Carson Wentz and Joe Flacco. So there's stands to reason that the secondary and just the defense in general really is going to have trouble stopping the pass. I think Tannehill is an interesting play this week, and I'm not sure what his ownership percentage will be, but I've seen him sort of touted in a couple different places. The running back committee is, well, this is such a funny note that the coach, the Adam Gase gave about, they said, we're going to go a full-blown running back committee, which I don't know, but I heard you're full-blown.
Full-blown, you have not seen a running back by committee.
It's just like such a
we're
weird.
Going four guys, six carries each.
Just word full-blown for some reason was really cracking me up. I'm not sure if you can get really excited here. J.J., Kenyon Drake, a couple other guys that are just sort of dustbin dudes. But I don't know. What about Tannehill this week? Do you think that there's enough passes for him against a pretty bad Browns team that can, you know, creep him into the cash game consideration?
Yeah, I mean, I guess I agree in principle that the Browns are probably not great, but like Flacco didn't exactly shred them through the air, 55% completion rate, and I think they were probably caught a little bit off guard by the fact that the Eagles were trusting Wentz so much, especially in the first half, in that first game of the season. So I mean, I don't look at Tannehill, frankly, as a guy who is like a world beater, you know? I mean, he was quite good against New England playing from behind in their week two matchup. So I guess it wouldn't surprise me if they come out there and he's quite good in this game. And there, you mentioned their running back situation is kind of a mess. I don't know. I think I like the Tannehill-Jarvis Landry connection. I think I like Landry as the better half of that. But it wouldn't surprise me to see Tannehill paying value at very, very affordable prices.
Landry's a guy that's showing up in optimal lineups for us right now on both sites. He's a huge target guy so far. He's in the top three or four in the league already with targets. He's converting, I think, a little better than his historical averages. You're encouraged by the completion percentage Tannehill had last week. Again, like you said, they were playing from behind, so it's always a little tough to judge that as based on like, the game script. That being said, Landry has 17 receptions so far this year, has not gotten to the end zone yet. So I still see him as a value if you think that the targets are real, and I think that they are. He's a guy that they've been incentivized to throw to in the past. If he has that connection, if he's going to be a double-digit target guy per game, which I think is like somewhere in the realm of reasonable, then I really like his cash game sort of floor going into this game.
Yeah, I think that's right on. And I guess back to Tannehill too, if we're talking about him versus Joe Flacco, they're relatively in the same price range. I prefer Tannehill to Flacco. I think that Tannehill at least has flexed the upside that you're looking for in those kind of cheaper things. And I think his connection with a true, you know, guy he's looking to directly on each play really helps as well. Jarvis Landry, by the way, averaged 10 targets a game last season, so I think that he can easily average that again this year. And he remains, I think, very, very underpriced on all sites probably. I think he'll be a cash game staple for many this week.
One sort of underrated thing about Tannehill is that he actually has run a decent amount this year. He has 11 rushes and a rushing touchdown, so he will get out of the pocket a little bit. He might not be the kind of I don't know if people think about him as that sort of profile quarterback, but 11 rushes through two games is kind of a real number. And if you're going to get 15 to 20 yards running, then I don't know, it helps your floor quite a bit in this game. Again, Miami, it's also really hard for me to like picture Miami just pulling away. I know that the Vegas line suggests that, but that running game plus they're just like not so great. I don't know. I think I'd be shocked if they just totally crush Cleveland, even though Cleveland clearly has issues of their own.
I don't know. The live spread right now is minus 10. That suggests a crushing to me, and I'll trust them. To be honest with you, I don't watch many Browns downs, and nor do I watch Dolphins plays.
Good for you.
So I trust the numbers on this one. I think that the game will be dramatically in Miami's favor, and that, you know, Landry in particular winds up with a great game.
The next game on the list we have is the Redskins and the Giants. The Giants are slight favorites. It's been bet up a little bit. They're coming off a week that were massively disappointing against the Saints in terms of just overall touchdowns. I mean, I know they got the win. Who cares about that? This is daily fantasy. We don't really care who wins the game at all. And this is like you're talking to a reformed Giants fan. So I just couldn't care less. What I do care about is that they just couldn't get the ball into the end zone. Fumbles totally crushed them on a couple of drives. Beckham outright drops a touchdown that really would have sealed the game early and actually sealed his upside in terms of how much he was sort of a chalky play. They're slight favorites here. Our system is not so much on the Giants, all things considered. Does like Cousins in this matchup. I'm wondering, you know, Cousins has had not so much historical success against the Giants. I'm not sure how much that matters. There's some locker room rumblings on Cousins. We talked about him a little bit last game. Where do you see this game going in terms of like where you're going to deploy some ownership?
Yeah, we talked about Cousins in the previous podcast because he is our favorite guy out of this middle tier price range guys, like between him, Tannehill, Flacco, and basically everyone else in the 7,000s. You know, going into the week, third in the league in passing yards, 11th in completion percentage, very solid. I think, you know, the pass TDs to interceptions ratio should turn. I mean, it's one touchdown to three interceptions so far. His completion percentage suggests something like the exact opposite of that. So I think that he'll turn it around against what probably is a mediocre Giants defense, you know, again, based on last season personnel changes and what we've seen so far. Obviously, it's not great that they kind of shut down the Saints last week. But yeah, and I think Cousins has a lot of safety built into this price that Flacco doesn't have, for instance, just because the attempts are through the roof. You know, 89 total passing attempts was tied for first in the league coming into this game. So I like Cousins quite a bit. I don't really like a lot of the pieces around him. I think they're either, you know, there's not enough work to go around in the case of the wide receiver guys, or in the case of Jordan Reed, great player, but simply overpriced. You know, if you're going to pay 7,400, I mean, an easy proxy to do this would be Cousins at 7,200 or Jordan Reed at 7,400. I mean, Jordan Reed is not a player in that range given his current usage. So, Cousins the only guy on the Redskins side of the ball for me. As far as the Giants are concerned, I think Shane Vereen will be a guy people try to play in big tournaments because they picture him as this, you know, a big upside, ball out of the backfield sort of guy. I'm not super interested in any Giants this week, though.
Yeah, no, I don't think so either. Eli's been spreading the ball enough around that it's hard to trust any of those, you know, individual wide receivers. They're all, I mean, it's good for the Giants as a team, again. But
the word is that Norman's going to shadow Beckham. So if you think that that's going to happen, maybe you like some of the other guys. But who are even the other guys? Victor Cruz?
I mean, the Redskins, what are they doing? Like, they don't shadow him against Brown in the first game. And now they just decide to do it. Like, this is a team that just seems like so like wishy-washy about just what they're even doing. It's also a team that allows there to be like a locker room narrative about Cousins coming out of the week where, again, like his numbers don't seem to back up that his players, the teammates should hate him. But the fact that like it's even allowed to be like sort of a thing is sort of strikes me as just a oh factor. So I don't know. The Redskins just seem like kind of like a mess for me from a, I don't know, personnel standpoint and just the way that they're, I don't know, the news sort of surrounding them. I don't know. They don't.
Well, sure. And again, to Norman, I mean, if you're going to pay that kind of money for one player, you probably have a plan as to how you want to use him, right? And you probably have a plan for like the first games of the season.
Nope. Doesn't seem like it.
On the schedule, right? You're like, hey, we've got Antonio Brown coming. What are we going to do with Josh? I hadn't thought about that.
You know what? That's a great question. Great question. I have no idea.
I don't know. What a mess. Left side of the field, I guess. I guess we'll keep him over there. I don't know.
Yeah, it's really it really just strikes me as like a team that is rudderless. And I don't know. I hate to totally just put in this like the mental side of things onto the team because all it takes is Cousins just, you know, having 300 yards, two touchdowns and a win and all that stuff is wiped off the map. But it just, I don't know, some of the news has just been a little bit more than concerning. Let's go on to the next game on the list is the Raiders and the Titans. The Raiders have not cured any of their problems from defending the pass from last year. They rank right now dead last in the league in terms of DVOA against the pass. Again, only 2 weeks, and they've had the problem of playing the Saints and the Falcons, two teams that will throw the ball. So, again, we're stuck in the middle a little bit, though, coming off last year. And this year, it just doesn't seem like they're going to be able to defend the pass. Marcus Mariota is a guy that the system really likes, especially on DraftKings. He's in the same price tier as some of the other guys we mentioned, like Tannehill and Cousins and Flacco on FanDuel. But on DraftKings, he comes in quite a bit less, like 15% less than those guys. Is Mariota a guy? We talked a little last podcast, but give me your thoughts again on Mariota here against the Raiders.
Sure. I mean, I think you can look at Mariota just on a comparative level and see that you know, he was better against Minnesota than Aaron Rodgers was, right? I mean, that's not everything, but it's something. And they're going to throw the ball a decent amount. His completion percentage is looking quite sharp. I mean, last week, 25 for 33 at Detroit, those are nice numbers. And if he's going to continue to do that, another guy whose touchdowns to interception ratio could continue to head in the right direction. And if he's going to do that, his team is going to trust him a lot more as well in terms of giving more plays his way. So I think that price on DraftKings is very, very juicy, Doug. It's a juicy price and a great matchup with Oakland. So.
No, I really feel like what's all said and done on DraftKings, this is the guy that I play in cash games. I think he has a high floor considering the matchup. I think he gives himself a higher floor if he's able to just run a little bit more than he has been so far. 6 total carries so far this season.
I hear the passion in your voice, buddy.
No, I love him. He was the first guy that I looked at going into this week, and I really haven't moved off at all off of that. So he just opens up so much more safety in terms of where you can deploy the rest of your salary across your lineup. And just at 5,900, coming in just a tick, you know, or even sometimes 2,000 less than some of these other guys, 1,500 less. Yeah, I'm kind of all over Mariota this week, and Vegas is backing that up to some degree. If they can just throw, I like Sharp for the same reason, if he's going to be another targeted guy against a bad defense. So yeah, the Mariota, the Sharp and Mariota connection for me is something I'm pretty interested in.
I mean, again, like your breathless description of how great you think they're going to be kind of reminds me of when my wife bumped into Vince Vaughn in the elevator and he was talking to our baby. It's like, maybe a little too excited here, but still, it's a good thing. I'm happy for you that you've got something, you know, already locked in here. So I like that connection quite a bit. I think Sharp, you know.
Wait, real quick about the Vince Vaughn thing. Well, my favorite thing about that was that neither of us believed either of our wives. They both came back separately and reported they had seen Vince Vaughn in the elevator, and I was like, no, you did not. And then, well, my wife did it first, and I just clearly just 100% didn't believe her, just totally outright dismissed it. Then your wife came and said it, and I still didn't believe it because I was like, no way, you guys are all seeing things. You got it into each other's head. Now, sure enough, it was Vince Vaughn. So anyway, and they were, yeah, a little too excited about it. What were you going to say about the rest of the games?
Yeah, I was going to say about Tajae Sharpe, which was that, you know, it wasn't fantastic to see him go from 7 for 76 to 4 for 33 in week 2. You know, rookie wide receivers do tend to be erratic. I mean, even at 4,700 on DraftKings, it doesn't really feel like you're doing it for that price. You know, again, only he got 10% of his team's targets last week. That's kind of bad. And yeah, it's only a 2-game sample size, but I'm a little concerned there. I guess I'm not feeling like if he had just gone out and replicated his week 1 performance, which wasn't even that fantastic, 7 for 76, I would feel so much better about this. And you know, again, small samples, you don't want to get caught up in things. He was still out there for every play, but I don't know that he feels like a safe auto cash game inclusion to me.
Yeah, it's close for me. We have him for 8.5 targets right now. That could be right around the reality, I think, and it's mostly,
yeah, it seems fine.
We're mostly looking at the terms of the matchup. The matchup, the Oakland so far this year and even carried over from last year, has been particularly bad against wide receiver ones. So again, like ranking toward the bottom of the league 2 years in a row, and I think that's what the system is pulling out for him, and I don't mind it because, yeah, he just strikes me as not totally cheap, but not expensive either.
Well, right? Yeah, and I mean, and again, the problem with projecting young players is, yeah, a lot of the stuff that tends to normalize relatively quickly over the course of their career, like, you know, how frequently they convert targets into receptions, especially when you combine that with a consistent quarterback pairing. Like, we just don't know any of that about Sharp yet. So in his favor for this week, it should be game script because, like, against Detroit, the Titans were just trying to, you know, hold their breath and hope the game would end. And so that didn't lend itself to a lot of downfield throws to him. I do think that this game will play out a little bit differently with, you know, them kind of trading punches with Oakland in sort of a different way. So wouldn't surprise me to see him have a great game. I'm not feeling terrific about it.
The Cardinals head to Buffalo to take on the Bills.
I'm really excited for this game.
Are you?
No, just kidding.
Cardinals have been a team that has been happy to sort of spread the love around. I mean, Fitzgerald has been decently targeted. They had troubles week 1 against New England. They came back in, you know, pretty nice fashion last week and blew them out. So I don't know if last week you can totally learn a ton of stuff. David Johnson's a guy that is actually second overall in our system in terms of raw running back points this week, though I'm not sure the price is in a range where you can consider it safe in cash games just because of how they've been using him. What do you think about Johnson here? Is it, you know, the carries have been low the first couple weeks, but again, the first game was a blowout and the second game was a blowout. So what do we really know about David Johnson?
I don't know. David Johnson's kind of a point of curiosity for me because he's never really been known for his consistency. I mean, we did see Forte go in and just crush the Bills, yep. And David Johnson is probably like a rich man's Forte at this point in his career. And nobody's questioning the skill set on David Johnson, but I think we're rightfully questioning the opportunity. Through two games, just 28 rushing attempts and 7 receptions, like, you kind of need a lot of excuses at that point to play a guy at premium top tier prices. That's just well below the threshold for what we're hoping to expect from guys in 8,400 plus range on FanDuel. I mean, you could take D'Angelo Williams and arguably get a whole nother running back's worth of, right. of touches in a given game. So I don't see feeling confident in David Johnson in cash game purposes. Basically, the story you're telling yourself on David Johnson is what you said. It's that game script thing where the game script just hasn't followed. You know, I have faith. I'm going to keep a steady hand here that it's going to turn back in his favor. And maybe even if it doesn't, he's got upside and big playability and all that kind of thing. I just don't – that's a lot of ifs and a lot of, you know, we don't know yet, but we think sort of things. And given it's daily fantasy and you only have to play two of these guys at this position – I don't know why he's one of your two for me.
Yeah, we have him right now for 17 carries and 5 targets, which...
It would be his highest of the season.
Exactly. And he's coming in, again, he's the second highest total raw points guy. So it's not like the system doesn't like him. It's just wondering if this is the way you should spend that salary. And I'm just not totally sure.
Well, and you and I mean, again, those targets, that's coming somewhat from data, but a lot of that's coming from our subjective analysis. And, you know, I think you and I might disagree on that. Like, I don't know that 17 and 5 is the right... is the sweet spot for like the sort of median or mean average of what he's going to do this week. So I think given that sounds like the high end of what seems fair. Now, he could have more, obviously, but if we're projecting like the averages, that feels on the high end to me. And if he's still not coming in as a play, then he's not a play for me.
Yeah, D'Angelo Williams and him are the same price, basically. On DraftKings, I'll take Williams all day in that situation, even maybe in a slightly worse matchup, though not tons and tons worse against Philadelphia. So yeah, I think Johnson ends up becoming a tournament play, though I suspect he might be chalkier because of that name thing and people are still expecting a big game out of him. Let's move on to the 49ers and the Seahawks. Seahawks to me strike me as a total mess. They're minus 10 going into this game. That has to be almost all in the defense. Wilson has looked bad and is hurt, and he's said as much. The receiving core is a little banged up, though Baldwin and Lockett are both going to play. Rawls has not practiced all week, though they claim he's still going to play. What do we make of the Seahawks team at this point?
It's just completely uncertain to me. I don't know why you're excited to play anyone, and it's not like anyone's prices are to where it's even worth taking a risk. So I think it's a flat pass for me. I don't think there's a single guy on this team that I'm interested in playing. I mean, really, is every position a committee right now? Tight end by committee, running backs by committee, wide receivers by committee. I mean, Baldwin's normally the guy there, but with the injury, and Wilson can't play well because he's hurt too, and just why bother? I mean, the defense, I like the defense, if that's something for you, but nah, I'm not going to play these guys.
Yeah, it's just too many unknowns. I mean, I guess if we got some kind of news by tomorrow, or even Sunday morning, that Rawls was just not going to play, then Christian Michael would pretty much jump to near the top of the list in terms of running back value plays, I think. But that would be, but Rawls needs to be out. Like, it can't be a situation where we're wondering about him or whatever. Like, he needs to be just listed totally out so that we can give Michael somewhere in that, you know, 17 to 20 touches game per game. And that would then be a value. But other than that piece of news, I'm with you. Total stay away. I don't see why you have to do it.
I mean, any news could come out that makes the situation more clear, and I would be more interested. But yeah, as of this moment, doesn't seem like it.
And actually, even come to think of it, Michael, let me ask you a question. If you knew, I know this is like total like ifs and buts, but let's say Rawls was ruled out. He's 6,900 on FanDuel. Would you rather play Michael or Melvin Gordon at the same price?
Well, I mean, Melvin Gordon, of course.
It's interesting. I wonder if it ends up becoming a little closer if he had a lot of touches. I think I'm totally with you, but it's just, it'd end up being pretty close to
me. Melvin Gordon's the same guy, except for we know he's going to get the carries. Like, I think the question isn't either or, it's do you play both, you know, and just don't go expensive at the situation, or don't go expensive there. But I don't think you're going to X Melvin Gordon out of the lineup so you can include either Seattle running back if they're the definitive guy.
I think I agree with you. The Rams go to Tampa Bay to take on the Bucks. Bucks have some interesting plays here. Rams, another one of those teams that's just sort of total mess and offense, at least. The defense hasn't been terrible. They considering they played the 49ers and the Seahawks, that Seahawks game, they've held the Seahawks to 9 points. Unclear if that was a Seahawks injury issue or if that's the Rams are actually good on defense. I'm not totally positive. What do you like on the Bucs side of the ball, considering Doug Martin is going to be out, another team that looks like they're going to go running back by committee with Sims and Rodgers?
Yeah, so Charles Sims looked like he was going to be the main guy early in the week. Now they're saying that Jacquizz Rodgers, in the running for worst first name in sports, coming out of the backfield with him. So what do you want to do? I mean, Sims also just isn't even cheap. He's 6,300 on FanDuel, so you wouldn't even really be getting away with anything if he were the clear number one guy, given that it's a committee, it's a complete stay away. Rodgers, just no. I mean, we've even seen times in the past where he's gotten the first team reps for a team and just not done anything. So if he's going to be like the third down back, no, you can't play either of these guys. Definitely not going to touch them. Really, even in big tournaments, it's just life is short and I can't root for these guys to pull a miracle out of their rear end, as they say. but I do think there's some interesting things going on the passing side for Tampa Bay. I mean, you brought Mike Evans to my attention as a guy who you thought was going to have a breakout week. So do you want to go into why you thought that was?
Yeah, I've actually changed my tune a little bit on him. I know we included the picks. I'm just not in the picks. I'm not as bullish as I was. I did some adjustments to the system last night and or early yesterday into last night. And it ended up giving him somewhat of a downgrade off of how sort of bullish I was going in. That being said, he's still such a huge target guy that I want to consider him because, again, he falls into that top five in the league in terms of looks. Now, a lot of that came last week against the Cardinals as they were playing from behind. But like as you mentioned last game, it is a real thing when you get 18 targets because no just random dude is going to get 18 targets. Like that's a guy that the quarterback is incentivized to continue looking at. So if he was to get into that double-digit target range, I would be – I'm definitely on him, though. I think after some adjustments to our system last night, he does fall a little bit below some of the other guys that we mentioned, like Stephen Diggs and T.Y. Hilton, who we'll get to in a little bit.
Yeah, listen, when you're analyzing a guy like Evans, I think it's just important to know what you're getting. And Evans is a clear guy to me that is a very format-specific play. So the two really standout aspects of his player profile are, first of all, his conversion rate on targets to receptions. So at 52% for his career, that's real bad. I mean, that's lower. Like, so the average of the top 40 wide receivers last season was around 63%. So right away, targets sent to Mike Evans are not equal to targets sent to just a league average top 40 wide receiver. That being said, he also has converted that to almost 16 yards per catch for his career, and that's elite. So with Evans, you're getting a guy week in, week out who's just almost always a big tournament play. His big games will keep his price high enough to where he's rarely a big value for cash games unless, you know, he starts out slow in the beginning of the season. But given that going into this game so far, he already has the two touchdowns, he's already kind of lived up to that reputation, had the one huge game, his price is high enough to where I'm just not over the moon here.
The next game on the list is an interesting one for us. It's just in terms of our system, Steelers and the Eagles. Eagles are clearly playing a much different style stands Chip Kelly this season. They're the slowest team in opponent plays per game by kind of far. They're averaging 50. Their opponents are averaging 50 plays per game against the Eagles. And the next closest team is at 53, so it's a, I don't know, that's a decent dip up, or I don't know, dip down, whatever you want to look at it. In terms of their pace, they're playing pretty slow.
But prepare for that to come to normalize quite a bit because they've also played two teams that just want the game to end. Right?
Agreed.
Then I think that number will move up and they won't be like, you know,
it's not going to get 50, lower.
Even 53 would have been the slowest team by like eight possessions a game or something last season. So I wouldn't put too much stock into that. But we can probably safely say that they're not going to be the Chip Kelly Eagles anymore.
No. And that's mostly what it is. Now, again, that number stands to reason. That number's going to go not way up, but up this week facing the Steelers. D'Angelo Williams is in that sort of in a class of his own in terms of volume. We talked a lot about him last podcast. I don't think we need to do the full breakdown of him. Is he just the clear cash game play at running back for us this week, and is it not even close?
Well, not even close is an overstatement, I would say. I mean, with Williams, like we talk often about what we want from that top level price tier because, you know, you can only play so many guys on FanDuel, for instance, that are 8,700, 8,800 and more. And if you're going to play a guy there, you better be damn well sure that he's going to go out there and provide production. Now, it's interesting to see how this has changed over time, though, because it used to be like three seasons ago, you'd basically need a quarterback to fill that role. Last year, we saw some wide receivers rise to prominence and be super, super consistent week in, week out. All stars in all different kinds of games. And Williams, you know, the way this season is playing out, Williams seems to be a guy, at least until Bell comes back, who might be, I don't know, is he the only player currently who fits this profile outside of the quarterback position of guy you can kind of play almost no matter what at this price? I don't know.
It just seems like it. I mean, he's had the touchdowns in his favor. Like, he has a crazy amount of targets. There's a couple guys that are sort of climbing to his area, like Forte and LeMiller are also pretty big volume guys that have gotten, for whatever, like Miller, we talked about him earlier. Forte's in the discussion also, but yeah, I don't know. The Steelers
sure. Williams 68 touches in 2 weeks.
It's unbelievable. He could get a bunch of targets and crushes lopped off, and I think it'd still be willing to play him based on the safety. He's the goal line guy. They'll throw to him in the end zone, like in the red zone. It's just he's all the things you want out of a running back, especially because, like I said, throwing to a guy near down and close is. Very few running backs even have that opportunity, and he's caught a touchdown so far. So, yeah, he just strikes me as so safe. I know that the Eagles' defense has improved, and they're not a bad team, but he's the exact guy right now that I want to pay for.
Yeah, that's pretty much it. And I think, you know, I don't fault anyone, especially if there's another, you know, late-breaking running back value and you want to pair Melvin Gordon with some cheap guy, or, you know, you kind of want to go double cheap and do something interesting at wide receiver for a big tournament or whatever. But given that you can save up on quarterback this week as well, if you go into that, you get a little janky with your Cousins, Tannehill, like, you know, whatever, Mariota on DraftKings, you know, I think you can afford Williams this week, actually. So, and I actually like a lot of the mid-tier value at wide receiver. So, yeah, I think this is a fine week to just take the safety with Williams and call it a day.
Yeah, I think I'm with you there. On the Eagles side of the ball, anything to – I mean, they've projected to put up some points. Wentz, Jordan Matthews, anything to get excited here?
Yeah, there is some stuff on the Eagles side. I do want to just give a quick nod to some other Steelers plays this week. Okay. I mean, we talked about Antonio Brown last time. We're still not worried about him. I think he's a fine play. But I think that, you know, it's kind of hard to – make that decision between him and Williams. So, but no, I think Brown is still a good play. And then there's Jesse James, of course, at tight end. We gave him some airtime last podcast, so we won't dive in too deeply, but I guess all I'll say there is it's clear that he's going to be out there for all the snaps. He's probably not going to kill you. It can't hurt to take just a super cheap guy in a very uncertain position. And I don't think you can count on him for a touchdown a game. So that's kind of my Steelers breakdown.
Yeah, he's showing up in lineups right now. I would kind of love to not play him, but just because I think there's a couple other tight ends for a little bit more that are safer. But I understand why it's pulling his name out because of the price.
Yeah, exactly. So yeah, that's kind of my Steelers take there. I do think that the Eagles. I mean, Jordan Matthews. I'd like your take on him as well, because it's kind of this weird thing where. He's still seeing huge targets. He's still not doing a ton with the targets thrown his way necessarily. Just because like that 13 receptions on 23 targets is like less than what I would picture for him given his role in the offense. But I'm wondering, do you see him, you know, increasing that number? Like as he and Wentz get more comfortable, or do you think that he's just kind of going to be a, you know, Mike Evans style guy who's not going to haul in a ton of the
I suspect that he is just kind of what he is at this point. I don't think he's necessarily running bad. I think that he's shown in the past he's just not the best pass catcher. Like he will get targets, but he has some conversion issues in the past, and I think that's between that and Wentz and there's some uncertainty there. I'm not willing to say that he's been, you know, super unlucky. I do like the fact that like you had mentioned, a quarterback honing in on a guy early and that just being kind of your guy. And so, and there's not like, it's not like they have anything else in the passing game that is butting up against him just getting the ball more and more.
Sure.
So I think the more that they play from behind, which stands to reason they could be this week, that you will see those targets there. You know, they've had a couple weeks in a row that they just haven't had to air it out over and over and over again. This could be the week where they do. And so I think just from a volume standpoint, I like him, though I'm not willing to say like, oh, he's just like running bad because of, you know, not being able to convert it. I think that is just kind of who he is.
Well, it's a little tricky, right? Because, I mean, with Bradford, he was around a 65% reception or conversion guy, right? So he converts 65% of the targets to receptions, which is fine. You know, that's above league average for the top 40 wide receiver slot. So if you're going to pencil him in for huge targets over the course of a season, then I think you're feeling good. But, you know, and again, it's so early on Wentz and Matthews, and so I hate to make any big proclamations here, but in a game where they were, you know, significantly ahead against Cleveland to only haul in 50%, it feels a little bit weird because there's two ways you can not convert, right? There's three ways. There's quarterback makes a bad pass There's you run routes that make it difficult to catch balls, and that's the Mike Evans thing. Mm-hmm. And then there's you drop the ball, right? And so by and large, I would say that the thing that's most correlated with not converting your target to a reception is the route you run. So if you are TJ Yeldon and you're catching a ball in the backfield, well, not too hard to convert that into a reception. And if you're Mike Evans running 45 yards down the field, or Mike Wallace, or one of these other true downfield guys, it's just you're not going to convert 75% of those into catches. With Matthews, I'm just not quite sure what the issue is. You know, like part of it could be Wentz, part of it could be Roots, but I guess it would we just need more time, I think, because I think that if they wind up settling in, like if it were Bradford right now, I would say, no, he's going to go back and be a 65% guy. But given that it's Wentz, I think that we could see, you know, a continued season long thing where he's converting in the low 50% in terms of targets. And then all of a sudden he's not quite as attractive. But all that said, I still like Matthews quite a bit. It's just kind of an interesting thing to keep an eye on, I think, as the season progresses.
He leads the league in drops. I just looked it up right now with three. I mean, it's not like some crazy number.
Yeah, three drops is nothing. I mean, again, even if he were 16, say he only had one drop, 15 receptions on 23 targets, I mean, obviously the percentages changed quite a bit there.
You know who led the league in drops last year?
What's that?
You know who led the league in drops last year?
I have no idea.
Mike Evans. Moving on to the...
But, you know, so drops are kind of a dumb stat, too, because again, way easier to drop a ball on a route that Mike Evans runs, like trying to catch something in traffic, or you know, you're sprinting fully downfield versus catching a bubble screen. So,
the next game on the list is one of the higher over-unders of the week. It's the Chargers heading to Indianapolis. We saw the Chargers last week without Woodhead, without Allen. They turned more to Melvin Gordon. He's a guy that's showing up pretty high in our system. We wrote up in the picks. On the Colts side of the ball, they have Dante Moncrief is out. T.Y. Hilton sat out yesterday's practice, though it doesn't seem like he sat out this practice at the same time last week, so I don't know if there's tons and tons of concern there. The guy that we did not write up but is now showing up for us in optimal lineups, not really with many adjustments, is Andrew Luck. Do you think that's correct on him? Because we went from basically going a cheaper route in terms of those middle-tier quarterbacks that we mentioned before, and it's still pretty close, but now paying really top tier prices for a guy like Luck in cash games. Does that strike you as correct?
I think it does, actually. You know, Luck was terrific against Detroit in week one in a loss. I mean, one thing that's kind of nice about playing Luck is that the Colts defense is so terrible that they really have no choice but to pass. And especially when you throw in the fact that they don't have much of a running game either. So, you know, it's kind of like a damned if they do and damned if they just try any of their other crappy options. So I do like Luck. I think he's going to be a high volume guy. I think he does have real weapons. I think that the him and T.Y. Hilton thing, you know, it's been a thing in the past, and Hilton is very much in that Mike Evans style category where he can get a ton of targets and do very little with them or explode for the best overall performance of the week. So I'm definitely looking at Hilton. I mean, Hilton, I think, is a phenomenal big tournament play, and it's arguably to the point where he's cheap enough that even like his downside is fine at these prices and given what we're projecting for targets wise. So yeah, I like both sides of that. I don't think that there's really anything to make me too concerned there. How about you?
Yeah, I'm actually feeling bad that I didn't write him up this week. All things considered, it was just one of those, we just chose a couple other plays and they weren't in the main picks article. He probably should have been, just from a point of honesty. Like, just because if he's a guy that's showing up in optimal lineups now, he really wasn't too far away, even with any slight adjustments from being there before. So I'm just feeling like this is all to say, yes, I feel confident with him. He runs enough to raise his floor a little bit there, 48 rushing yards in the first 2 weeks on six carries, which is, you know, good. And then just the volume of passes, he scored 87 passes in the first 2 weeks. And like you said, that's because their game plan is to throw. And they're going to always have to throw because they can't stop anybody. So, like, even if they're not blowing someone out, they're just not going to blow anybody out because they just can't stop. They can't stop the offense. So, yeah, I love Luck. I think the floor is really high. You know, we've talked about coefficient of variation at quarterback. It doesn't really move too much. And if you're getting that kind of safety at this kind of price, it was the Cam point last week where he was expensive, but when you have a matchup that just favors their kind of profile of quarterback, then you just kind of have to pay for it. So, yes, I'm all over Luck this week. And on the flip side of the ball, Gordon's a guy that's showing up in optimal lineups for him. I think that's correct, too. The Chargers need to be able to run the ball. They don't have the weapons they had before. And Gordon is the guy. He's averaging many more yards per carry than he had been in his career. That's not something that stands to go down against a team like the Colts. So I'm all over Gordon, especially if he's going to be sort of their three-down back at this point.
Yeah, and Gordon, I mean, he's never been an exciting yards per carry guy in the past. So, you don't want to crown him on 4.2 yards per carry, but yeah, it's just a great matchup, and it's just the right time to play a guy at 7,100. I mean, this is what passes for a value play nowadays, and I'd be a lot less excited about Gordon at like 8,000, but at 7,100 on FanDuel, I think you're actually doing something interesting there. So I think that he's clearly the guy of all these kind of inheriting a bigger role guys that we've discussed, that he's clearly the most exciting guy.
For me. The most encouraging thing was the 3 receptions for 18 yards last week. Again, it's great to see the carries. I think we knew that was going to kind of come, but the fact that they're throwing him the ball, which has not been part of his makeup in the past, means that they're just sort of out of options at running back, and B, just willing to trust that he is the guy that can play all 3 downs. I think that
it sounds like a small thing, but I think that's right on.
He ends up becoming a chalkier play. I'm not sure if Luck is a chalk play, but he might be just if you're going and getting some savings elsewhere. Look
at the Vegas Lions and all that stuff. I think that, you know, when you're picking between him and some of the other big name guys, I suspect that he'll be higher owned than maybe we think.
Travis Benjamin was a guy that sort of had a breakout game last week. 6 catches for 115 yards, 2 touchdowns is what really boosts. I mean, 6 for 115 is really, really good. The 2 touchdowns is what puts him into the upper stratosphere in terms of overall fantasy plays. Do you think we can go back or go down a Travis Benjamin route? He's 6,900 on FanDuel, and he's a little cheaper on DraftKings, where he's maybe more of a PPR style play. Only 5,200 on DraftKings. What do you think about Benjamin coming out of the Chargers? Wide receiver core.
Yeah, I think I like him on DraftKings. I mean, again, I think he'll be one of the possession guys there for San Diego, and they clearly like someone in that Keenan Allen role, kind of controlling the middle of the field and moving the chains and all that kind of thing. I think that on FanDuel at 6,900, maybe just a little bit out of range for me. I mean, people are going to play him, don't get me wrong, and I don't think it's terrible, but I think that as you start to go up into those higher price ranges, what you're saying is that basically he's going to get more targets and that he's going to continue to convert targets into receptions at the same rate, and I'm not prepared to say that really. I mean, he's converted, 13 of 14 targets into receptions, so that's just a lot. I mean, you can't rely on a guy to do that in perpetuity, and you know, just the 6 targets last week. Again, that was a blowout, so you know, you could see that continue to increase, but you're projecting continued growth at these prices, not saying like, yeah, no, I'm happy with him at 7 targets a game. Like, if you think he's a cash game play this week, you're thinking more like 8.5-9 targets a game, and maybe he gets that. I don't know, but it's not super as safe as it seems, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think he ends up being, he's sort of in that Diggs category where I'm not sure people will see the touchdowns and translate that to overall fantasy performance. Again, he could be.
We'll see the yards and the receptions too, and right. I think that could be a risk as well. I think he's going to need 9 targets to score, you know, get 115 yards in the future, maybe more. I mean, he had 7 receptions for 32 yards in week 1. And I think that tells you about how the Chargers would really prefer to use him.
And and it's funny too, because we're a little not sure about what the Charger game plan. You know, Keenan Allen went down early in that game, so which stands to reason that Benjamin has more opportunity, but also Woodhead was still there. So, and Woodhead's clearly like he was almost like their de facto WR1 in terms of volume when he's around, but now they're both gone. Yeah, I don't know. We have him for 7 targets right now. Again, that's a number that could be way low. I doubt it's way high. When it's all said and done, but if there's a number that was going to be a little bit low, I could see the 7 targets being low, but I'm not willing to take it to, like you said, like 9, because we just don't have anything to suggest that's going to happen. The next game on the list is the Jets going into Kansas City. Forte was a pretty big volume guy. We mentioned him a couple times in the podcast so far, though the Jets go into this game as slight underdogs to Kansas City. Does Forte's total overall volume right now make you want to sort of jam home him into cash games because of how much they have him touching the ball? Or does the overall implied odds, the fact that they're a little bit of a dog and just it's a low-scoring game, scare you off of him?
Yeah, it's really interesting with Forte. I mean, he really is one of those top 4 volume guys so far earlier this season, you know, alongside of Miller and D'Angelo Williams and LeGarrette Blount. I don't know. I mean, a lot of people are going to play him. You see him at the $7,500 price tag. And 32 touches last week and 27 the week before that. That's all in a very attractive profile. I think here the question is Kansas City's defense. I mean, they were so oppressive to the run last season, and we're projecting them to continue to be that oppressive. And while the Jets looked really good against a defense that was good last season in the Bills in their last matchup, I don't know that we can just assume that they're going to continue that kind of success against tough defenses going forward. So I'm not saying the Forte is an easy cash game inclusion. although I suspect he will be for a lot of people.
Yeah, Kansas City, they've been, it's funny about them this year because they have allowed a lot of opponents plays per game. They are not very, have not been very good against the run so far, 21st in DVOA. Again, this is early in the season. Those are a couple, those are two signs to me that they are maybe just not that slow ground and pound team that we expected them to be. So, but again, Vegas sure thinks they are, and I just, this is where the truth may just lie somewhere in the middle. I don't think you need to force Forte in considering some of the other options, though it wouldn't shock me if he was another 30-touch guy and had a pretty good game. Just, I just think that there's a couple pieces of conflicting information here that have me just not wanting to figure it out on Forte this week.
Yeah, in Kansas City, I mean, they only gave up 19 points to Houston. That's not bad, although Houston then proceeded to get shut out against the Patriots,
right,
who have less of a defensive reputation than the Chiefs have. You know, the San Diego game was a really weird one because San Diego obviously came out of the gate and just blew the doors off Kansas City,
mm-hmm.
but then they just stopped scoring, right? So I think that, you know, that game was just so strange that I think it's hard to take a lot. It certainly, you can't really take much about Kansas City's plan out of that game, right? Because Kansas City's plan normally is to just take the lead and then hold the ball and hope the game ends. And since they couldn't do that, they were forced to play strongly outside of their comfort zone. I do think that when the game script calls for it, that they're going to play a slower game. Like, I don't think, not much has changed their personnel-wise that would lead me to believe that they're all of a sudden going to air it out or play some sort of Chip Kelly style offense.
Mm-hmm.
So given that the Jets also, I don't think, have that high swinging profile for offensive acumen, I think that this could be just a low scoring game where, you know, teams are just trying to make incremental gains and get small edges here and there. And I don't think that that lends itself quite as well to Forte having a monster performance. That said, the volume is there and the price is still very affordable, and I can't fault anyone for playing him.
I don't mind playing Jeremy Maclin this week on the Chiefs side of the ball. The Jets have not been very good. You know, AJ Green lit them up in the first week of the season, and then the Bills somehow put up 31 on them last week. And Macklin's been one of those top five target guys this season. He has not converted a ton of them, but Alex Smith has been, you know, somewhat accurate in the past. You know, we've seen some big games being put up by receivers. I like the price on Maclin. I don't think that many people will play him. And I just, you know, he strikes me as a higher floor guy in this game. Revis is not Revis Island anymore if he's even going to do shadow coverage on him. So, yeah, I like Maclin in this one. I don't think the Jets defense is anything I need to be worried about, really.
No, and Maclin, I think he's a really hard one to evaluate in terms of how the team's going to use him because essentially he had the 115 target game where he only had 6 receptions. And that was where Kansas City was trailing and trying to come back. So I don't know that we can look at that necessarily and say, you know, really draw any conclusions about how he's going to be used going forward. I suspect that the first week, you know, 5 receptions on 7 targets is closer to the truth than 6 receptions for 15 or 6 receptions on 15 targets. But, you know, really, really anything could happen. I do think, though, that he'll be more like just a league average 65-ish percent conversion rate guy, and then we see something like 8 targets, which would make him a solid play this week.
All right, the Sunday night game is the Bears without Jay Cutler versus the Cowboys. Cowboys have been good with Dak behind center. Like I said, the Bears go into this game as they started at Dallas starts at -4.5. Now with no Cutler and just the Bears stinking, it's up to -7.5. Do you like anyone really on the Dallas side of the ball? I think there's a couple interesting guys here.
Yeah, we've talked about this on the previous podcast, but I think that Ezekiel Elliott is pretty interesting for this week. So Elliott, another guy, I mean, we were very concerned about him going into the season. We talked about this, I think we've talked about this several times, but we were concerned mostly about his workload, and those concerns have largely been quieted at this point. I mean, he had 23 touches last game, 21 in his first game against the Giants. I think that we could see something like that in this game, and given that the Bears are just pretty awful, I don't see any reason to think that Elliott won't be quite good against them as well. And he's still priced below that top tier of running back. So at 8,100, you know, he's cheaper than David Johnson, D'Angelo Williams. And he's not on their level, I don't think. But in a good matchup, I think he could easily provide just as much upside. Like I'd rather take him over Todd Gurley at 8,300, for instance. I like Elliott. I think the wide receiver situation in Dallas is a little bit trickier to parse. One guy that, you know, was showing up on our system quite a bit was Cole Beasley earlier in the week.
Mm-hmm.
Given he's just 5,100, and I could see him being a premier punt this week. Do you have any feelings on Beasley?
Yeah, it's so hard to get excited about a guy like that. I get why the system likes him. He's seen a decent amount of targets in the first week. He's not really a red zone threat, so I don't think you need to. You can't really pencil him in for any touchdowns necessarily, just because they're not going to throw. They're not really going to throw right. Between Witten and Dez. They're not going to throw to Beasley and close. But you know, 13 catches for 140 yards in the first 2 weeks. That's pretty nice, and that's a nice possession guy. And I think he's more of a cash game.
70 yards a game is, you know, the rate you're paying, like paying 5,100 for 70 yards a game at the wide receiver position. That's very affordable and a good value.
The key there is 3,200 on DraftKings and a PPR style. If he's going to get 6 for 70, you know, per game, and that's where Dak's going to look, then that's a nice floor for giving him away.
Yeah,
for a really cheap wide receiver. Again, I don't think you have any touchdown upside on him, but you probably don't need to at 3,200.
Maybe not a lot of touchdown upside, but anyone can punch a touchdown in from time to time, and I think that the touchdowns are just gravy. That's not why you're playing. Beasley,
that's the point I'm trying to make. I'm not saying that he can't score. It's just he's not likely to score, and that's the only thing. That's the reason I would trend away from him maybe in tournaments, because I don't think you're going to see that, you know, supreme upside. But like you said, any guy can just sort of scamper in at some point. I think I'm with you all over the place there. I think Elliott's a guy that we end up playing in later slates, like 4 p.m. on slates, where you want to maybe get some of that running back safety. I like him in those spots. I don't think I'm going to end up running him out there in the main slate, just because.
No, that makes sense.
I just don't think he is the guy there, considering some of the other running back options.
You can either go up and get Williams, or you can go down and play like Gordon or Forte or someone like that. And yeah, he's probably just kind of in the sweet spot of not quite there.
Yep. The last game is the highest over-under of the week. It's the Saints and the Falcons. The Saints have shown, again, that they cannot stop all things considered, cannot stop the pass. I know that they had some luck against the Giants last week, but I think that was more luck than it was that they are any kind of stout defense. Giants had a couple key fumbles on drives, a couple drops on drives. And the Saints just, I think, are who they are. The Vegas total, you know, suggests this as well. On the flip side of the ball, Falcons, you know, stand to come in here as a little bit of underdogs. I think that all things considered, it's probably nice that this is not on the main slate of games, because we don't need to consider it for like the Sunday only big tournaments. And I kind of just like that, because there's a couple guys that I'm having a little trouble evaluating here. Give me your thoughts on Julio Jones. I think right now, among all DFS outlets, we are about as low as you can be on Julio Jones. Do you think we are sort of sticking our neck out on him with how little we have him projected for compared to like the industry writ large?
Well, I think that's kind of an interesting observation, simply because we have him as the second highest total point scorer at the position for this week. So, you know, and that can all be relative. So I suspect a lot of people like him better than Antonio Brown for this week, for instance. I think Julio Jones, you know, we did a pretty extensive breakdown on his targets going into this week, just trying to figure out what the relevant data to look at here is. And so what we, I think, ultimately concluded was that, Julio Jones was a really transcendent target guy last season, but that was more of the outlier than it has been the rule for him in the past. I mean, if you go back to 2014, Jones had just 163 targets and then has a 40 target bump into the next season. And that's a lot, right? I mean, he played one additional game, but, you know, adding 40 targets from one season to the next is pretty unusual. And I think a lot of the narrative there was, you know, well, he's coming into his own. He's like this young player who's going to get more reps. But after being a little bit dinged up last season and some small injury concerns again going into this season, and also just the addition of a lot more options in Atlanta, I'm just not sure Julio Jones is going to go out there and be one of those big three target guys for the whole season. I mean, certainly it hasn't borne out that way so far, just 6.5 targets per game in the first two games of the season. And with Atlanta having some success through the air, passing to Sanu and Jacob Tammy and some other guys, like I don't think it's correct to just go in there and say he's an 11 target a game guy right now. And so if he's not, he needs to do a lot.
And I think that's where we differ from some other outfits, where I think that a lot of other outfits are still projecting. Yes, he's a huge raw point guy. He's the raw point guy because of the matchup, really, at this point. It's not because we have him for a ton of targets. We have him in like the kind of like upper middle tier of in terms of targets at this point, because I just think that's correct. I don't see a scenario where the Falcons have to force feed him the ball 13 to 15 times a game. They just have other options. They can throw out of the backfield to Freeman and to Coleman. They, like you mentioned, Tammy. They have Sanu. Ryan really spread the ball around last week against a bad defense, and Jones is a little dinged up. And I think if anything holds down his ownership, it's that last piece, right? He's playing Monday night, and there is just not, I think he plays, but if you add all those little factors together and that he might be a little bit hurt, I'm fine fading him. I think I'm totally fine fading him. In some ways, I'm glad that the game does not fall on the main slate because we just don't need to make not like necessarily a decision about him, but I think we would be, like, if this was the 4 o'clock game, we'd be having even more intense talks about it because it would just be sort of a, we'd be almost in a full on fade situation. We're not going to be that way because he doesn't end up becoming on the most popular slate. And then because he's on a limited slate, he might end up just being there anyway, if that makes sense, what I'm saying. But
no, it does. And I think Jones, I mean, the thing about Jones, and it's always a risk to go out and say, like, we're not going to play this insert wide receiver one with a good matchup this week because it can only really go badly, right? Like,
sure.
No, if you play Julio Jones this week and take the industry consensus, you're not going to be too mad if he's bad because he's going to be a chalk level play. I think what we're just trying to point out is that, you know, honestly, you will not see Julio Jones in a lot of our lineups going forward, you know, for both the reasons we've stated. And I mean, this calf thing, like, we've seen wide receiver ones just fall off a cliff when their legs start to go out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the strained calf, I mean, he missed practice on Thursday. People are saying, like, we're feeling optimistic. Well, you can feel as optimistic as you want, but if I'm going to pay $9,500 on DraftKings, like, I want more than your optimism, right? Like, I'd like results, or I'd at least like a good narrative as to why the results haven't been there so far. And I just can't find one for Jones. I mean, all you're saying, like, if you're in the Jones is going to turn it around camp, you're just saying that just because. Like, it's not based on anything you've seen this season. It's not based on anything coming out of Falcons coaching speak or anything like that. What you're saying is small sample size, he'll be back. And what I'm saying is, I wonder if last season was less representative of who Julio Jones is than the rest of his career.
For the same price, I'd much rather play Antonio Brown in a worse defensive matchup than play Julio Jones in this one, I think. Just because Brown, for me, nothing has changed on him. I know he had a bad game last week, but there's just evidence to suggest that, like, that game, you know, it was a low conversion. Like we talked about, the weather was bad. He still had 11 targets in a game that was played a little bit slower and in bad weather. There's no one really competing with him except for D'Angelo Williams in terms of just overall touches for that team. I'd much rather play for the same exact price. I would take Antonio Brown over Julio Jones just about every time. I get and maybe actually even be on the better side of the ownership percentage on that one, because I think people will see the New Orleans Saints, will see Julio Jones, and will just sort of talk themselves into that narrative.
Yeah, well, and you had last week, you had him against Oakland, right? And that was much worse matchup than this one against the Saints? I don't think so. And he got lucky last week. I mean, five targets to turn that into 106 yards and a touch. You can't count on that. So
early season DVOA would suggest that that was the better matchup against Oakland. So,
that's what I mean. Yeah.
So, and all things considered, I'm fine maybe just going on a little bit of fade if it's a little closer, and especially if not taking Jones allows you to roster three of the middle tier target wide receivers that we mentioned here, I think I'd rather go that route, because you just might end up getting as many targets from each one of those guys as you did in Jones in this matchup.
Yeah, it's completely reasonable.
I think that's it for us today. We pretty much crushed it, I would say. I know I spent most of this podcast crushing it. So I don't know.
I took a brief hiatus from crushing it when I was stumbling over my words and we had to retake that one part in the middle. But generally speaking, I think I was there too.
So. Yeah. We are from dailyfantasysportsrankings.com, DFSR.com for short. Go over and grab a limited time free 3-day trial to our projection system powered by Lineup Lab. Helps you one button click optimal lineups for FanDuel and DraftKings. Good luck on week two, we're done with week two. You don't need good luck with week two anymore. Good luck on week three, NFL. We'll be back early next week to talk about the week that was, buddy. Good luck over the weekend.
Later, alligator.